Today's daf is Mem Hei, and we will start at the beginning of Perek on Mem Hei on the base. Hines on the Helek of Perek. Hashutafim shenadru hana'a ze mize, asurim likanes lechatzer. We have two people who are partners in a particular piece of property. Each one of them asks the other one on hana'a, which is a word of warning against getting into anything with a partner. So they are both of them not allowed to go into the jointly owned property. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, zenichnas etov shelo, vezenichnas etov shelo. Each one could go into their own area, because they each have, basically, since they have dual ownership. So what would be the problem? Shnehem asurim la'amid rechaim v'tanur u'legadel tanegolim. However, both of them, even according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, would be prohibited from doing things that are something that each one could prevent the other one from doing. So that even though normally, if shutafim, one guy wants to put up in the chatzer, he wants to put a matzah baking oven, let's say. Normally they're not makbid one on the other, but that's vitur. I have a right, if I want to prevent you from doing things like that in my chutz, because we're talking about a yard. The yard is not meant for having a bunch of chickens, raising chickens. If one of the neighbors wants to raise chickens, like we have here in the Rova, so if one of the neighbors wants to raise chickens, the other neighbors can prevent him from raising chickens. Even though, of course, a kind neighbor would never say anything about the chickens, who would just use cotton in their ears, which is what we used to do when we stayed in that chutzner over the summer. switch with my daughter. But since that requires vitur, because that's the idea, I won't say anything, but I could. And vitur is usher. So therefore, in that case, you couldn't go ahead, even though the other guy didn't say anything, you couldn't go ahead and do something which depends on vitur. Vitur is that I do not assert my rights. The norm is that I, even though I have the rights, I won't assert them. Well, we've been talking about the entire last parak. That's how the parak began. You can't walk to the other guy's field.
I think that
temporary.
The review would be very useful if you'd sit and you'd learn the parak. It would take you all of an hour maximum to review the entire parak word for word, and then it would all come back.
If I do that, then we're going to get the review of the parak?
And then I would seriously consider it if you would do that. But to give a review of the parak to keep up for people who aren't willing to put in the work to review the parak doesn't seem really fair. But anyway, vitur is asur. We're saying that was what the entire parak assumed, is that vitur is asur b'mudah hanah. That was Rabbi Eliezer Shita, and that's how the parak began, the previous parak. You cannot cut through his field. And that was all right. From here you see that vitur is also, you know, normally people don't mind if you cut through their field. So here's the case where even if I'm a shutaf, since a shutaf doesn't need the other guy's vitur, he does, for things that are not really built into the partnership. A partnership in a yard doesn't give you the right to start baking matzahs there, and doesn't give you the right to start growing chickens there. So both would then be asur. Now, hayah achad mi'amudar hana'a mi'chaverav. If one was prohibited from going into the other ones, so then that individual would of course be usher to go in, but the other one is mutter. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Yocholu Lomar Lo Tetoch Sheli Ani Nichnas. So this obviously follows from the first section, and is unnecessary to be said. It's not a chiddush, not for the Tanakama, and not for Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. I mean, obviously, if both can answer each other, then one can answer himself. I mean, that's not the point. The only reason that we say this, says the Ran, is because of what we're leading up to, which is the current words, the Tofim, et ha-noder limkor chelko. Since in this case, one of them is Asur and the other one is Mutar, we are afraid that, as opposed to normal Nadorim, where if a person asks for something on himself, we don't force him to get rid of it, for fear that he may be nichshal in it. There's no such halacha But over here, where two people are using the same area, and properly speaking, they would both be using it in the same way. And here, one guy sees the other guy using it, as is perfectly in his rights to do, and he can't. And this is nerve-wracking. He gets to feel, well, I mean, why don't I just use it too? And so he will come, therefore, to be over on it, and he would end up using it. In such a case, we will tell him that he has to sell. Now the question is this true only according to the Tanakhama, or is it also true according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? Because remember, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, he can use his section. The only difference between his section and the other guy's section is that he cannot raise chickens, and the other guy can. Now, if he's really jealous of the other guy's raising chickens, he could always say, I don't want you raising chickens in my chutzim. Why, therefore, would we say that he might come to raise chickens himself? So probably this is only true, I'll leave it a Tanakhama. However, the Ron says it's true even according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Let's review again because I see we've lost you. I'm going to be going back to the beginning of the Mishnah to explain the Iker issue here, obviously, but right now just dealing with these minor questions at the end. So we have a machlokas here between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, whether the field becomes mutually usur to each in the event that indeed they each usur the other, or whether we view each section as uniquely, whatever I'm using my own, I'm not using yours. What that machlokas is complex, we'll get back to it. And then obviously the same thing would apply if one person usured himself and the other one didn't. But what did work out is that even, no matter what you hold, even if you hold that each one has a right to do what they want, but certainly you cannot raise chickens. You cannot put up a matzah oven there. Why? Because even though normally people don't mind if a partner will do that, but that itself is also, when someone is also banai, he can't do the kind of things that require the other person's vitur. I relinquish my rights to protest. That's what vitur means, relinquishment. Right? So okay, I can't take your relinquishment because that will be a hana'a that I'm benefiting from. All right. So now the Mishnah introduces this new section that discusses something completely unnecessary because it's already obvious in the Rashi. If each one can answer the other one, or can answer himself on his own, so then obviously if only one does, then that's the one that's us, and the other one is with him. Or he's us or anyway, whatever. But we're both are mutter, depending on the machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and the Chachomim. It's the same machlokas. Why introduce it? Because at the end of the statement, we're going to say, in a case where only one is us, we force him to sell off his section to somebody else. Because otherwise he's going to end up doing, he's going to be over on this net. Why don't we force a person every time something is us or on him? Let's say a guy says, I will not be nana from my oranges. So why don't we force him to sell the oranges for fear that he'll end up being nana? Because why can't he be careful not to be nana? We don't get involved in other people's business. You got a problem, so make sure that you don't come to be niksha. But in this case, it almost cries out for being over on your nana. Because the whole point of partnership is that you feel it equal to the other guy. And here the guy is using things and you can't use it. And since it's your own fault, we're talking about where you and Noder yourself, it's your own fault, so go sell it off then. Don't put yourself in a position where you're going to end up being jealous of another person's usage and say, this is unfair, he gets to use what we own jointly, I should certainly be allowed to use it, and therefore sell it. So I asked you, what about according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, according to whom you're allowed to use your section, so what are you going to be jealous about? All that's left is that the other guy would be allowed to raise chickens. In other words, the other guy doesn't have a problem with your relinquishing your right to protest. Right? And you do, so you can't raise chickens. See, if you're really going to get jealous of the other guy's raising chickens, you could always say, I don't want you raising chickens either. Because you do have that right, it's just generally you're not mocked, but if you're going to get so worried about the other guy's use, You get so hung up on chickens, so for God's sake, go ahead and tell the guy, don't raise chickens. But why should we tell you to go ahead and sell it? There's nothing for you to be jealous about. To walk into it, you can do, just like he does. To raise chickens, you can tell the guy, you also can't raise chickens. So it means you end up having exactly the same usage. Would we say that nonetheless you have to sell? Says the Ron, yes. Because even though theoretically you could tell a guy to not raise chickens, come on. I mean, what are you going to think about yourself? I mean, you're the guy who made the netter. It's not as if you're in a fight. It's not that he said you can't be netted for me, so at least that way people will justify you're being an absolute no good. They could tell the guy you can't even raise chickens. But like this, you created an issue on yourself, which is obviously the only case we're going to force you to sell. The other guy can't force you to sell. You create the problem by saying, I don't want to be netted from your chutzah. You're part of the chutzah. So what are you going to do now? You're going to make yourself an even bigger schmo by saying, and I don't want you raising chickens. Boy, what an idiot this guy is. So Mamela, you're not going to tell the other guy not to raise chickens, but you'll end up raising chickens yourself. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Yisrael Ben Yaakov, we will tell you to sell. Which you should have done a month ago. Now it's too late.
Can you force your partner to sell together?
No.
So this is the only way you can be forced?
No. You force yourself to sell by making yourself awesome. Of course, we're not talking about financial elements. There are times you can force a partner to sell.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, but that's a complicated.
The payment is either way.
We're not talking about the financial arrangements. We're talking about over here, you're creating problems with Isser, not Moma. Okay, now, how about Haya Echad Ben Ashuk Mudar Be'Echad Me'em Ana'a? If somebody who is neither of them, that person is not allowed to neneh from one of them. He too cannot walk into the chatzer, because according to the Tanakhama, the chatzer always entails the use of both sections. And since one of those sections is prohibited on him, he can't walk in at all. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, no, consistent with my theory, Yochol Lomar Lo, he can always tell the guy that he's not allowed to be neneh from, excuse me, I'm not walking into your area of the chutzah at all. I'm walking into the other guy's area. So therefore, I'm allowed to come in the same way that you yourself, if you're usher ba'na'ah, you're allowed to say, I'm walking into my own area. So too can someone else who's walking in say, I am walking into the other guy's area, not into yours. Now, in order to walk in to the other guy's chutzah, the question, I mean, do we have a right that anybody from out the outside can walk into the chutzah? Or is it only where he's walking in on business for this other guy? In other words, it's clear if I can answer, according to the Tanakhama, I can answer the rights from over here, from myself, because of the use of the other shutter. What would be the din about somebody else? I mean, obviously, I can certainly usher somebody else, right? If someone else could be ushered to walk into the chaser. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, even on somebody else, here I'm a shutter. I'm saying, look, I don't want this guy in our yard. Right. So according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, I mean, according to the Tanakhama, obviously I could do that. I can answer you. But according to, now the question, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, could he say, now wait a minute, you could say that you're going into yours, but certainly when somebody from outside walks in, you can't say he's walking only into yours. Correct? Kamash malan, that you can. Because the connection to the rights of somebody else to walk in is always me or anyone on my business, obviously. Because when I'm an owner, a joint owner of the chutzah, it's not just that I have a right, it's that I have a right for my use or for the use of people that I want to be coming in on my business or anybody who's knocking on the door and saying he's here on my business.
Unless you live in the row, which is for us.
That's certainly true. Right? Okay, so now the chiddush would be, therefore, that this, the halacha, the heter for somebody else to come in, is a chiddush over here according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, lechora not a chiddush according to Rabbanan at all. There's nothing here that's a chiddush according to him. Okay, we'll see later on the Ran actually holds not like this. He holds there is a chiddush according to Rabbanan, but that involves an understanding of issues that we haven't reached.
There's a discussion also about the nature of shutus, whether they're partners in the whole thing or each has an own chiddush.
That's what we're going to be talking about when we get back to the beginning of the mission in a moment. Okay, so over here we would say that if you're coming in on the other guy's business, at least this is the way the Rashba learns, it has to be dafka on the other guy's business. There are some who say that no, that in fact if somebody is coming in on their own business, they can still focus and say, I want to talk to him. So even though you're an itinerant salesman or something like that, so the other guy could say, look, you can't walk into here. You understand? You can't walk into here because I asked you about it. You can say, well, I'm coming in to sell something to the other guy. Does the other guy know you're coming to? No. But I want to sell something to the other guy. That's about focus for Shonim. Which, again, we'll talk about later on in the Gemara. But right now, everything seems to add up. And we can continue the Mishnah. Hamudaran ha-micha ve-ro ve-yeshlo merchat ve-bet habab muskarim ve-yir. Im yesh ben tvisat yad mutar. Actually, you know what? Let's hold off on that section. That's a whole other can of worms. Let's go back now to the beginning of the Mishnah and try to understand what the issues are. So once again, Hashutafim Shinadru Hana'azem Izeh, two people, joint ownership in a property, are able, if each of them, Aser, the other guy, from having any Hana'ah from the other, both of them become Aserim Likanes L'chatzer, according to the Rabbana. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, each one can go into the other one's property, into his property, by claiming this is his and not the other one's. What is the question that is involved over here? So the truth is that there are four separate issues that we have to take into consideration. And because of this, it's a rather complex question. Our first question is, yes, but stretching your neck has a tendency to take you into higher planes. This is in preparation for our bicycle ride. Okay, our first question is, what type of property are we talking about? Are we talking about a property that yesh ba din chaluka, or a property she'ein ba din chaluka? There is, as we will see when we get to the relevant sugyas in Ezekiel, there is a difference in the assumption of what a joint ownership is, depending on the size of the property and the usage of the property. So if this property is large enough for one shutaf to insist that we need to split it because it is actually sufficient for separate uses of both, that's called a chatzer sheyesh ba din chaluka. It is possible to split this. If we were talking about a chatzer sheyesh ba din chaluka, then, in fact, the Gemara elsewhere says that everyone would agree to the Tanakhama. You could certainly aser. Because the Chatzer Sheyesh Ba Din Chaluka is always, essentially, meant for two people. And all that we're doing is, I'm allowing you to use mine in exchange for your allowing me to use yours, because we haven't gotten around to defining that. So that we always, therefore, are using the other guy's place. We're always using the other person's Rishus. It's just we haven't done what we need to do in order to properly define whose is whose.
It's his and his mine.
Right, it's yesh ba din chaluka. If ein ba din chaluka, now we run into something else. If ein ba din chaluka, now there are the following questions to take into consideration. First of all, is vitur asur b'mudar hana'ah? Because basically, even if we'll assume that if I'm walking into an area that is jointly owned and it is not meant to be split, basically each one of us, the worst that's happening, the worst possible case, what's happening is that I'm walking on your land, so to speak, because you own every other molecule, let's say. So what? I mean, but that's vitur. We always allow you to walk. But that's the point of our shutafut. I allow you to walk. Ah, is Vitur Asur or is it not Asur? Up until now, the entire parak, we've been assuming, the previous parak, we were assuming all along, Vitur is Asur, the Gudar Anov, which at Stam, it's coming back from Eliezer, if you remember, from the beginning. Well, that's just here the issues. So that's issue number two. Is Vitur Asur, Gudar Anov? Issue number three is the very complex question of Breira. There's one way of looking at joint ownership of the kind that can never be split physically, is that it's split in time. In other words, it's split in terms of whatever happens in the actual usage. So that when I originally buy the property together with you, the understanding is that this property is mine when I need to use it and yours when you need to use it. So you'll say, so can we define that up front? No, we can't. Whenever you need to use it, it's yours. Whenever I need to use it, it's mine. The problem is that elements that are defined later in time and are meant to be included in a contractual arrangement up front are called elements of Breira. That means that in time it will be defined what it is that we meant back in the beginning. There's a major machlokus about whether retroactive understandings are admissible in contracts or in other dinim. Admissible in contracts or other understandings. Does it have any legal standing? Can you say, now exactly how to understand this machlokus, we'll see, is a machlokus rishonim and may even be a machlokus here in the Mishnah, which we'll talk about. But the way Rashi typically defines Breira is that Breira is viewed as a mechanistic vision of reality. So if something ends up working out a particular way, it's because it was always going to work out that way. We're just waiting for time to play through so we can find out about it. But in a mechanical universe, things will play out, and then you have a right to say, well, if this is the way it played out, this is the way it was meant to play out. Those who hold Ein Breira hold that the universe is not mechanistic, says Rashi, and this is how we posken actually, and that there's no such thing as what would does play out as what would have played out. Actually, nothing was meant to play out. What might have played out at that point could have been completely different than what ended up playing out. So there's no way to say that what happens is a retroactive definition of the state of the universe at the time that we entered into our contract. Okay, so this is a major machlokas. Obviously, the way to understand this sugya is very deeply connected to that question. Because if we understand the joint ba'alut to mean when I use it, it is mine, so then obviously Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov would be correct. He would be saying, when I use it, what's the problem? You answered on not using the other guy's thing. But since when you're using it is yours, because it was so defined up front because of Yesh Breira, therefore, you're not using the other guy's. You're using entirely your own thing. Okay? That would be the third character.
What was number two? Number one was whether the chutzir is dividable or not.
Is it chutzir sheish matin chalukah? Number two was vitur asur b'mudar hanah or not.
Okay.
Number three is whether yesh breira or ein breira. And number four is an alternative approach here would be, well, I'll tell you number four and then see how it applies. Number four is the question of whether konim is mafkia midei she'ibud, which we've spoken about before. Where someone has liens of usage, not actual ownership, but a right, some type of lien or easement, can, which is essentially another form in the Gemara Lashon, is another form of she'ibud. It's a commitment that I have, so it's a commitment to ease your rights of access. Or it's a commitment to allow you a particular thing at a particular point. That's a shibud. Renting something can be seen as a shibud. I give you money, not that I will now own your car, but in exchange for this money, you are committed to giving me a lien on your car for usage, so to speak. That's how we could view sirut, which will have important implications here for our mission. Okay, so therefore, the fourth issue about whether konim mafkia midei she'ibud, can a konim, which is the nature of neder, similar to Hegdash, remove a lien that somebody else has. Hegdash can remove a lien, and now I'll have to give the person back his lien. So even though he has a lien against me, normally that lien could create a stop order against my doing something else with the property. So I'll come along and I'll say, excuse me, sir, you can't get me out of this piece of property because I have a lien, I paid you rent. So for the next 9 months, it's my property to use. But if he went in and was magdish the house, would say, well, they'll have to pay you back. But Hegdash has now rights to take away any previous liens that exist on the house. So they could take it over, throw you out of the house, and now you could go sue the other guy for your lien. Since a co-name is similar to Hegdash, so it may be, we discussed this also at great length before. It's all very nice if we understand the relationship of these two partners is not a Brera relationship, because I don't believe in Brera, then the way I would understand it is each person is leaned, their property is leaned to the other person's usage when he wants to use it, because that's what the partnership demands. So since we cannot define precisely which is your area and which is my area, let's look at it as each molecule is jointly owned. So now if I want to, you cannot use my molecules. Ah, but I have a lien, which allows me to use your molecules. Where did you get that lien from? From the very mutuality of the arrangement of the partnership. If we buy a piece of property jointly, and that piece of property is not large enough to provide for our both usages separately. So it's ein badin chaluka. So what then gives me the right to walk in this property? The fact that we are partners and that in having bought it together, it's understood that I have an easement on using your molecules. So your half molecules are lien to me when I use them. And of course mine are lien to you. So therefore I cannot tell you off of my property, you're trampling over my molecules. But suppose I create a Hegdash on my molecules. Then, since Hegdash is Motzimi De She'ibud, using a koneim as the strength of Hegdash will allow me to say, I'm sorry, your lien was just canceled by Hegdash. Off of my molecules. So what are you going to say? You're only stepping on your half of the molecule? That's the definition of molecules. They can't be halved. They're chotzer she'en badin chaluka.
Why can't the tenant be a tenant?
You step on the
problem. Oh, Hegdash. Why can't the tenant be a Hegdash? Why can't the tenant remain to be a tenant of the Hegdash?
We're not talking about the actual ownership of Hegdash. We're talking about the usurim of Hegdash. That's the meaning of koneim.
If a building is a Hegdash,
Yes, but suppose Hegdash says we don't want anybody to use it, so you're going to be mayo. No, we don't want to wait. We intend to use this. Please leave. If you stay there one extra minute, you'll have to bring a carbon. That's mi'ila. Can Hegdash make you be mayo? And say, this is our money, not yours? Yes. And you say, but I have a lien, but Hegdash is mafkia, your lien, so koneim by definition. Since the whole purpose of the koneim was to cancel your lien, a koneim that canceled your lien. So these are now the elements that we need to take into consideration in this circuit.
The idea of undivided interest in a piece of property, where there isn't some, you have a piece here, a piece of
right.
Undivided.
Right.
Either in the produce or in the field itself. So where does that fit into this concept? Or is that not an operative concept?
It is an operative concept, but what does it mean? Let us analyze. That's the machlokes here. Let us analyze what is meant by an undivided interest. Clearly, ba'alut, the way that ba'alut is defined, is a specific relationship. That specific relationship cannot belong to two people any more than a woman can belong to two people. You'll notice that the word ba'alut means husbandry. It's the same word as husband, right? So in the same way that you cannot be a husband, two people cannot be a husband to this woman. Two people cannot be the husband of this piece of property. We learn out the dinim of having a woman from a property. So the nature
was to appeal the produce.
You must be aware of a fundamental difference in the Torah's vision of ownership from the civil vision of ownership. In the civil vision, ownership is financial rights or rights of usage. In the Torah, those things are not definitions of ownership. They're just definitions of rights of use. The rights of use are fundamentally different than ownership. They border on the issue of liens. And this is an important yesod that runs through the entire question of Nizikin. It's the only way, by the way, to understand the absurd kind of mitzvahs that will tell you to pay four times for one kind of animal, but five times for another kind of animal, and double for another piece of property. You know, what? It's ridiculous. If we're talking about finances, then none of that makes sense. What's the difference whether the financial interest looks like pork bellies or whether the financial looks like a walking ass? It's all the same. So if it happens to be now an ox, it's going to be different than if it's a sheep. Correct? Okay, so there's two completely different elements in Jewish law, which, by the way, accounts for the concept of interest. Because if ownership is a commodity, there's no possible difference between my renting out my money and my renting out my car. And yet, if I rent out my money, I'm dead, according to the Torah, dead meat. If I rent out my car, I'm doing everything fine. It's a mitzvah, no problem, I'd say. Just like any other business. Part of the mutuality of human existence. Okay? So it's absolutely essential for you to get that idea out of your mind. Financial interests, usages, and so on is not ownership. Therefore, we're talking about ownership. There's no such thing as joint ownership. You can't say that something completely belongs to one person and completely belongs to another person. And ownership is defined as completely. So now the question is, what do we mean when we talk about partners owning? So we have these various possibilities. If it's a type of property that suffices for the use of two owners, so this one woman is actually two women, so to speak, then one of the women is one's and one of the women's is the other's. And you're saying, but we haven't defined whose is whose. Fine. So meanwhile, I let you use my woman and you let me use your woman. But obviously, we can't define them both as completely ones and at the same time completely the others. So that's one way of looking at it. Since we're talking about over here that there's insufficient property for it to be split in that fashion, we have to come on to some other creative solutions for how we could have joint ownership. What we could have is oscillating ownership, so that as one individual uses it, it's entirely his. As the other one uses it, it's entirely his.
Is the third example.
This is Brera. That works through Brera. If you don't hold a Brera, then you're going to have to find another creative solution. The other creative solution is that joint ownership actually consists of an undefined half that's owned by each with a lien to allow the other to use the other. But then you get into the problem of whether Konim can take off those liens. Okay, so obviously our Mishnah, therefore, could be creatively interpreted in various ways. Why is it necessary? Oh, come on, man. Why is it necessary to creatively interpret the Mishnah? Because we end up with contradictions in the Psak Halacha if we don't. That's the big problem here, and that's what this big, big run here is at the side. It's trying to deal with the issues that come to be the contradictions built into our Sugya. The biggest contradiction is that since elsewhere the Gemara defines the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and the Rabbanan to be dependent on the issue of Yesh Breira, and here we pass it, like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who holds Yesh Breira, and therefore when you walk in, you're walking into your own area. And the problem is that elsewhere we say that in any issue that involves a Dioraita, Ein Breira. How do we square those two Piskei Halachot? That's the big problem in our sugya. Please, please come back. Come back to earth. Okay. So now there are a number of interesting solutions to that problem. One solution, which is the Rabbeinu Tam's solution, is that it's all very nice to paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov. But who says that we're paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov because he is Breira? Maybe we hold Ein Breira, and Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov is wrong in his reasoning, but right in his psak halacha. His reasoning is that Vitur is Asur, but Yesh Breira. Our reasoning is that Ein Breira, but Vitur is Mutar. So when we pass it like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, we don't really believe that the reason for it. He didn't know what he was talking about. He happens to be right, as so often happens with one's wife.
I think the problem is that Earth is Meshutah, but Cloud 9 is sole ownership.
I think the problem is that Richie did not set up the coffee maker yesterday. That's the main problem.
Things are locked in the way. We have to get access.
I think I opened it up purposely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Door open?
Left, right one is, left one isn't.
Well, no, the right one is the one that's, that he's supposed to get it for.
We could use the stop there. Just drunk half a cup of the most delicious crispy coffee.
Double shot
in the bakery. Double shot.
Okay, so.
Now feel it. What happened? The shelter, where were
we
in the 60s?
Because we're on a motorcycle. Okay, gentlemen. That is one approach. The problem with that approach that the Ron brings up, and that I'm sure bothers you as well, is that we just finished an entire parak in which every single Mishnah shouted out, Vitur Asur B'Mudar Hana'ah. For us to throw that entire sugya out and now suddenly say, well, but we didn't really mean it. Very difficult to believe. And therefore, if we're paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, then there must be a good reason. Okay. The Re wants to say that it's a mistake to think that we paskin, there's no Breira in the Deoraita. All the rayas about there being no Breira in the Deoraita are actually rayas that Yesh Breira ben Rabbanan, and that's all the Gemara meant. It didn't mean to say, but ain't Breira b'Deoraita. Okay? His rayas are very interesting rayas. However, the Ron doesn't like that either. Okay. Is there another solution to the problem? Well, yes, there's other solutions to the problem as well. The Ramban. The Ramban says, actually, although we're using the word Breira here, we do not mean a time-oriented Breira.
Who's using the word?
The Gemara elsewhere in Boba Kama talks about this sugya as being dependent. This machlokas is a machlokas of Yesh Breira Ein Breira. We don't find any other approach to the Mishnah. Therefore, we stuck with that. Okay, so that we're got to be talking about Boba Kama says this Mishnah in the Doran is a machlokas about Yesh Breira Ein Breira in terms of the ownership. Says the Ramban, we do paskin Yesh Breira, but this Breira is a borrowed term. It does not mean Breira in terms of time. What it means is a new concept of oscillating Baalut that does not require looking into the future and saying that was the definition of our contractual obligations. Breira simply means an ownership that oscillates between two people, which is basically what Abba was trying to create. What we're talking about is true joint ownership. So although you're right, we don't have a concept of joint in the sense half for me and half for you, but why can't we have oscillating ownership as needed?
Timeshare.
Timeshare has to be defined. You can't just, what does timeshare mean? I mean, obviously you get into all of it, you get into serious legal issues with timeshare. Am I a real owner? Am I a leaser? Am I, that's a big issue. Came up with the Kenya terrorist strike. You know, who owes who what in that hotel? That's a big problem. You owned a piece of that hotel?
I was going to, and I
you were saved.
I saved David Solomon.
I mean, a lot of people here were caught in that. Okay, so use the word timeshare can have meanings that are going to keep you in court for 50 years. So let's not use the words too cheaply. Okay, the Ron says, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what this oscillation is supposed to mean. If we're using the word Breira, then Breira means something was chosen at one point that wasn't there at another point. And if that's true, if you're using that word, then something has got to be changing, and changing is a function of time. You're back where you started from. Things can't change unless they change dimensionally. So what good is using the word Breyer? You wouldn't use the word Breyer. It's not a good borrowed term. It's a brilliant time. Right? The Ron has his own approach. The Ron says, I'll tell you, the deal is that normally Breyer seeks to define the entire nature of a transaction or the entire definition of what is happening. In other words, let's say you don't know where the great show in town is going to be on Shabbat. Is the good shear going to be on the east side of town, or is the good shear going to be on the west side of town? Okay, so there's no way to know because the Chacham is only going to be arriving after you make your air. You don't know whether he came on that road or he came on that road. Where's the good shear? Come to Or HaChaim. No, it's not. It's a very political announcement.
It wasn't paid.
It wasn't paid. So now, you're going to say, well, if it turns out that the good show is to the east, I want my Erev to be on the east side, so I can walk out of town to the good show. If it's on the west, I want my... Now, I will only find out on Shabbat when he shows up. All right, so then the entire issue is now sitting there waiting for us to know. There's nothing that we can achieve at this point. Right? There we say, Ein Breira, says the Ron. But in this case, the transaction is done. We are now joint owners. What we've done is we've signed a contract to buy a piece of property. We've left open the details. The details are the exact times for the next 100 years that we will each be using this property. Fine, that's not considered to be a question about the transaction, about the nature of the transaction. That's the details. To say Ein Breira is because you can't say something that is in its essence a suffix can be left hanging for time to deal with. But you can say that a transaction that is well defined can allow its details to be defined in time. So holds Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, says the Ron. The Rabbanan, on the other hand, understand the nature of Breira to be a fundamental issue about the nature of reality. What's the difference, whether it's the details or it's the whole thing? It's not because there's a problem of a suffix is not something you can close a transaction on. It's because there ain't no such thing. There is no moment that's going to be clear in advance. There's nothing in advance. So according to them, Yesh Breira, Ein Breira, is it to be or not to be proposition? There's no way in which you can have it partially to use just for a small piece of a transaction. So that's the machlokus in the Mishnah. And when the Gemara in Bava Kamma says they're arguing about Yesh Breira, Ein Breira, it's not that they're arguing Bichlal about Ein Breira. Of course Ein Breira. That's true in the Diraita. They're arguing about the nature of Ein Breira and whether it would be proper to use the part of the Breira that is just filling in the small details where a transaction is essentially concluded. So we really have four different approaches here. And as I said, because of the fact that we've got a lot of leeway, because there's so many issues that this Mishnah is taking into consideration, you can see that we've got wiggle room if we've got any kind of problems with contradictions in Pesachim. It is not clear in the Mishnah what exactly, how each Shita stacks up on all of the above issues. It's the Gemara that forces us now into a corner of looking at it particularly this way or that way. But the simple explanation, the Gemara says, they're arguing about Yesh Breira, Ein Breira, but that takes all of these other things for granted. Okay? So this is an extremely, extremely exciting mission because it's obvious what the elements are. Right on the surface, you could see, wow, this is really fun. You thought Go was something, huh? And therefore, we're going to really have so much fun in this parak that we've got to get Sabotage back. Let's do a 10-second review.
And we barely scratched the surface.
Hashutavim, shenadua na'az emize, asurim lekaneis v'chatzer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, amir, zenich nas v'tok shalom, v'zenich nas v'tok shalom, but shnehem are asurim la'amid rechayim v'tanur l'gadil tanugolim. Haya achad mihem udar ma'ana'am v'chavero, lo yikaneis v'chatzer, obviously, according to Rechami, and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, v'yocholu lomar lo v'tok shalom, yani nichmas, v'ni nichmas v'tok shalom, obviously, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the chiddush, however, is that kofin et anoder v'nkor ha'chokho, היה אחד מן השוק מודר באחד מהמנעה, לא ייכנס לחוצר, because obviously if the Rabboner, at least that's what we're assuming so far, obviously according to the Rabboner, if I can answer even my shutaf, I can certainly answer, I can answer somebody else. So or, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov אומר, יכול לומר לו לתוך שלך, ואני נכנס, ואיני נכנס לתוך שלך.